everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast. From the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal, I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's October 2020, and you're listening to episode 203, which is a conversation about the Black community and abortion. On this episode, I'm joined by Aaron Turner Jr., who has an MDiv from Covenant Theological Seminary and serves as Director of Outreach at Midtown Church in St. Louis, Missouri. Aaron has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Black Lives Matter, Inside the Womb and Out. And you can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. Aaron, it's good to have you on.
Thank you, Melanie. It's good to be here.
Well, this is going to be a provocative conversation for this episode because we are talking about abortion, which is a topic that is very controversial in our country. And in addition, we're going to be talking about abortion in light of how it impacts the African American community. So I just want to start out and ask you, Aaron, just because the title of your article that I just mentioned, you know, do you see any natural parallels in the unjust killing of the unborn and the history of oppression of African Americans in the United States?
Absolutely, Melanie, I do. And maybe one way of kind of showing that is a few years ago, I was looking at a very popular kind of medical website. I'm sure many of your listeners have probably used it to get information for themselves, called WebMD. And what I did was I went on WebMD and I compared kind of at similar weeks. I think I was looking at the second trimester of what WebMD said about if you went on WebMD and you were looking up information about your pregnancy, if you were a woman and you were pregnant and you wanted to see how things were developing, kind of week by week, it gave you information. And I compared that to what WebMD said when it came to looking at if you wanted information on an abortion procedure, if a woman was looking at kind of what would that be like and how would they describe it. And what I found was if you were looking at like second trimester, looking at your pregnancy, it described the child as a baby. It referred to the child in very glowing terms. Like if I recall, it was things like, you know, your baby at this stage is developing a heartbeat or his brain is maturing. And it kind of went into this like very kind of beautiful thing. However, when you looked at the information, if you were considering an abortion for the second trimester, it referred to the baby as I think one of the terms was uterine contents. So it wasn't a baby. It was the uterine contents would, you know, at this stage, or referred to the baby as tissue. And the only difference, we're talking about the same stage of pregnancy. The only difference was the will of the mother, if the mother wanted to keep the child or if the mother didn't want to keep the child. And that kind of factored in to how they described it. And the way that I think that parallels what Black people have experienced in the United States and why we should be very sensitive to this issue is because I think given our history, we should be sensitive to how like denying a group's full humanity can easily lead to oppression and murder. And I think that's what you see in the WebMD article. Instead of calling it a baby, you call it uterine contents or you call it tissue, which then means it's more okay to kill the child. And I think as Black people, we've seen in our history how dehumanizing language can lead to the justification for oppression and murder. Michelle Alexander, in her book, The New Jim Crow, early on in that book, she talks about kind of how during the time of slavery, Black people were often referred to by the broader American culture as a lesser race or as uncivilized or as less intelligent, which then implied to the broader white America that it was okay to mistreat this group of people. She also mentioned how Native Americans in early popular culture was referred to as savages, which also meant it was okay to mistreat. So I think in particular, I guess to sum up, I think in particular, as Black people, there's a link between dehumanizing language and how we see the unborn and how Black people were looked at historically, and how that brings about a justification for oppression. And we should be concerned about that.
So I mentioned the name of your article, Black Lives Matter, Inside the Womb and Out. So why did you decide to give your article on abortion in the Black community this particular title?
Yeah, I wanted to call attention to the threat against Black lives that takes place through abortion. When you think about, like, the Black Lives Matter movement has focused attention in the American culture on kind of suspected police brutality and the unjustified killing of Black people by the police. And when that actually does happen, this is just kind of as an aside, when that actually does happen, I totally support shining the light on those incidents when a Black person is unjustifiably killed or brutalized. And given how our nation has historically despised Black skin and in certain areas of our national life still treats Black people unequally, it makes sense to make sure that Black lives are being valued and treated with respect by our nation's law enforcement agents. But be that as it may, I think in the big scheme of things, relatively few Black people will unjustifiably lose their life from a police officer. So though that happens, and when it does happen, it should be looked into and called out. But at the end of the day, most Black people in America are not going to die from a white officer killing them. And so my provocative title is trying to call the Black community and America as a whole to consider the number one cause of death in the Black community, which is abortion. And let me just say that again. The number one cause of death in the Black community is abortion. Most people don't know that. Most Black people don't know that. And if you Google it, it even seems like Google doesn't know it, because if you Google the number one cause of death in the Black community, it will say heart disease. But the reason why that is because the organizations that are kind of calculating how people die don't count abortion as a cause of death. They only count it in terms of once a person is born. So they'll say heart disease. But in reality, if you look at the number of Black babies that are killed by abortion, abortion is the number one cause of death. Just to give you a few stats, Melanie, approximately 14% of women in the U.S. are Black. But according to the CDC, 38% of the nation's abortions are performed on Black women. So 14% of women Black, but we make up 38% of abortions. And when you compare that with non-Hispanic white women, they make up 60% of the population, but account for only 35 to 39% of all abortions. So Black women and white women have about the same percentage of abortions, around 35, 38% or so, but white women make up 60% of the population, whereas Black women only make up 14%. Here's a crazy example. From 2012 to 2016, in New York City, more Black babies were aborted than were born in that city. And that's not true for whites. That's not true for Asians. That's not true for Hispanic peoples. But for Black people, for those 4 years, actually more Black children were aborted than born alive. So I think this is a serious issue that is not getting the attention that it needs, both inside the Black community and outside the Black community. When I talk to people, they're surprised. They're surprised, for instance, to hear that if you take leading causes of death amongst Black people, like heart disease, let's say diabetes and homicide, if you take those three leading causes and if you combine them all together, they still don't make up more causes of death to Black people than does abortion. In fact, abortion is at least over twice as much as heart disease, diabetes, and homicide brought together. So my title, I'm trying to emphasize, look, if Black lives do matter, which they do, then Black lives should matter not just when a white officer pulls the trigger. And I'm trying to point to the fact that the most dangerous place in America for a Black person is not in the hood, is not in an interaction with a white cop, the most dangerous place is inside their own mother's womb. And that's a hard reality, but I think we can't face it as a community until we really look that square in the eye. And that's not to minimize other causes of death and unjustified killings. We need to deal with that, but this issue is going ignored.
I want to ask you, you know, this will probably be a very controversial question, and I want to start it by giving just an anecdotal story, and that is, in college, I knew somebody who was a friend of a friend, and this guy, he was Asian, and he's an atheist, and he was very pro-choice, and so he went to a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood, and he came back from that fundraiser and talked to some of the people, some of us who are Christians, and said he realized as he sat there that Planned Parenthood was racist. I mean, this was a couple decades ago. So I want to ask you that question. So do you believe that the abortion industry today is consciously a racist system? For example, there's some people that argue that Planned Parenthood, who does perform a lot of abortions, builds clinics near Black communities in order to, you know, offer up abortions and particularly target maybe Black people with abortion, you know, to encourage it in that community. So that's kind of a question, right? Is the abortion industry consciously racist? And I would say, I don't know what they specifically said at this fundraiser, but it really was disconcerting to the guy that I knew. And he came away from it thinking what was happening was racist. And I want to say that it was in Los Angeles. So they were talking about clinics that they had in the inner city, which made him come to this conclusion. Again, that's just anecdotal of one person I know has not even a Christian. And that's how they came away with this. But I want to ask you about that because of just my own experience of hearing a story from someone who had come to that conclusion.
Yeah, that's a very interesting story. I would love to know what was said at that conference that made your friend feel like that. You know, that's a tough question because that is definitely something that I hear a lot, especially from Christians that are involved in the pro-life movement, the belief that Planned Parenthood is consciously targeting Black people, and kind of the main evidence is the location of the Planned Parenthood facilities. And I would just say, you know, I don't know. That's a tough question. I don't know. I'll say this, even granting, I guess, the assertion that Planned Parenthood puts its facilities primarily in Black communities, which I will say from my research, that is a disputed fact. There are some that say that is true. I've also seen some that argue that that's actually not the case. But even assuming that, where it gets tricky is that, okay, if Planned Parenthood disproportionately has its facilities in the Black community, is it because they are explicitly targeting Black people, or is it because of a supply and demand issue? So like I mentioned earlier, the reality is that Black women disproportionately have a high number of abortions. And so which is it? Is it the chicken or the egg? Is that partly because Planned Parenthood makes abortion so easily accessible to Black people, or is it because, or is Planned Parenthood moving in because we have a higher demand for abortion in the Black community? But nevertheless, even if we don't know the heart motivations of everyone kind of involved in the Planned Parenthood organization, I would still say that we can still see this issue of abortion in the Black community as a civil rights issue simply by looking at the outcomes. So I don't know the intention of the leadership of Planned Parenthood and how they make their decisions about where their facilities go. But what I do see is the outcome. And the outcome is that Black people are disproportionately, extremely disproportionately aborting their children. And this has decimated, this practice has decimated our numbers tremendously, tremendously. And so I see it as a civil rights issue just by looking at the outcomes, even if I don't fully know the motivations of everybody involved.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Aaron Turner Jr. He has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Black Lives Matter, Inside the Womb and Out. You can read his article for free online at our website, equip.org. Now, I know you've heard me say this to you a lot, but I really want to reiterate how much we appreciate your partnership with us and want to ask you one of the best ways that you can partner with us is just a few moments of your time. Please rate or review our podcast. We haven't had any new ratings or reviews since August. So if you've been thinking about it, but been putting it off, would you head on over to Apple Podcasts and give us either a starred review or even better yet, if you have a moment, just jot down a quick sentence about why you think others should listen to this podcast. In addition, the best way that you can help us out is just tell a friend about our podcast or share the link to this episode or any of your favorites on your social media account. In addition, you can always subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. Do that at equip.org. And if a subscription is right now not in your budget, that's no big deal. We would be so grateful if you could give us a tip for all of this free content that you get online as well as this podcast. Go to equip.org. On the front page, you see magazine, click that. Go to the drop-down menu, the second choice, Postmodern Realities, click that. And at the landing page for this episode or any episode that you want, you will see a link to give us a tip. And thank you. Thanks again for your partnership. Without you, we could not continue to bring this podcast to you for free for more than 200 episodes. So thank you. We were just talking about Planned Parenthood, and it makes me want to ask you about the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, who recently, I just did a podcast on cancel culture. She's been canceled over this summer. You know, things have come out about her that Christians have pointed out for a long time. And as a matter of fact, in an article in the New York Times this summer in July, they talked about how Planned Parenthood of Greater New York is going to remove the name of Margaret Sanger, who founded Planned Parenthood, from the Manhattan branch of Planned Parenthood because of her connections to the eugenics movement. That's what they specifically said in their comments about why they were doing that. So, you know, was Margaret Sanger, I just mentioned that they noted she was involved in the eugenics movement, but because of that involvement, was her goal an extermination of Black people?
Yeah, that's another real serious question. So I will first say I'm not a Margaret Sanger scholar. And I say that as a Margaret Sanger, quote unquote, scholar. Is this woman who, you know, was definitely kind of a, I mean, I call her the Apostle Paul of contraception. I mean, she kind of had the zeal, not to denigrate Paul, but she kind of had the zeal of an evangelist in going around spreading kind of her gospel of contraception. And so she's left behind a lot of writings. And I have only, in just starting to, you know, in doing research in this area, have only kind of dipped my toe in her writings. But from what I can tell, I actually take a different position than probably most pro-life people do in how they view Margaret Sanger. And I'll just say up front, and I'll give some facts, but up front, I don't think at the end of the day, Margaret Sanger was a friend of Black people. And I'll tell you why. But let me also say that I don't think there's, from what I've seen, and again, I haven't read everything. That's why I started off by saying how much she's written. But from what I've seen, I don't see evidence that she was actually a racist. I don't see evidence, surprisingly, that she actually supported abortion, nor do I see evidence that she actually aimed to decimate the Black population through abortion. Now, she was a supporter of the eugenics movement, as you mentioned at the top, Melody, but I would argue from what I can tell is it wasn't race-based eugenics. That doesn't make it good, but it was a different type of eugenics. So just to give a few things, and I will say this also, when I first came to really studying this topic of the issue of abortion in the Black community, I assumed from all that I had heard that Margaret Sanger was a racist, that she did promote abortion to target the Black community. However, what I came to find actually really was surprising to me. And so my desire as a Christian is to really want to follow truth wherever it leads, because I believe that that's a Christian virtue. I want to do my research with integrity. And what I found actually was very different from what I saw sometimes on pro-life websites. And so first, I'll just say the question of was she a racist and was she targeting Black people? Let me just quote something that she said in an interview with a guy named Earl Conrad in 1945. Margaret Sanger was 58 years old at the time. And she said this, she said, quote, Discrimination is a worldwide thing. It has to be opposed everywhere. That is why I feel the Negro's plight here is linked with that of the oppressed around the globe. And then she says, the big answer, as I see it, is the education of the white man. The white man is the problem. It is the same as with the Nazis. We must change the white attitudes. That is where it lies. And then she goes on later and she says this in the same interview with Earl Conrad in 1945. She says, here is another example of how attitudes have changed. When we first started out, an anti-Negro man offered me $10,000 if I started in Harlem first, that is with her contraception program. She said his idea was simply to cut down the number of Negroes. And he said, spread it as far as you can among them. That is, of course, not our idea. I turned him down. But that is an example of how vicious some people can be about this thing. End quote. So it seems like there, Margaret Sanger is, she's all about promoting contraception. However, when she was presented with an opportunity for it to be race-based, she declined. Now, I will say that there are certain quotes that you can find out on usually pro-life websites, as much as I love pro-life websites, that I think sometimes there's a key quote that seems to suggest that she supported kind of wiping out the black population, but it's taken out of context. But I will say, even though, and this is one of the things, Melody, that is usually most shocking when I speak at pro-life conferences, that actually Margaret Sanger wasn't a racist and wasn't aiming to kill black people. And then the other thing I'll add is that it's usually surprising for them to hear that Margaret Sanger actually didn't support abortion, from everything I can tell. Keep in mind, Margaret Sanger died in 1966. So she was the founder of Planned Parenthood, which is the number one abortion provider in the country. However, Roe versus Wade, which allowed for abortion in the United States, did not happen until 1973. So Sanger died in 1966, which means that her organization was not performing abortions during her lifetime. And in fact, she's on record as saying that she's against abortion. She's for other forms of contraception, but she's against abortion, except for in the case of the life of the mother. That was the one exception that she made. Now, why do I say that she's not a friend of black people? I don't believe that she's a friend of black people, because Sanger was, as you pointed up at the top of the question, she was a believer in the eugenics movement. And even though she wasn't a supporter of race-based eugenics, Sanger, she had negative views about all different types of people. So from my research, Sanger looked down on people who had intellectual disabilities. She looked down upon people who were disabled, people who had certain diseases, criminals, people that was considered feeble-minded. So she had negative views on those groups of people. And as a result, with her eugenics, she wanted to try to lower the populations of those group of people because she believed that it took away from the flourishing of the human race as a whole. Now, the problem is, especially with that last group I mentioned, the feeble-minded. The feeble-minded back then was often an actual official kind of diagnosis that you could get. You could be diagnosed by a doctor as being feeble-minded. And from what I can tell, that group and some of the other groups I mentioned was more associated with the poor kind of in her mind. But if a person is labeled feeble-minded, and even if Sanger isn't a racist herself, if she's relying on the conclusion of a doctor in that society who oftentimes could have been racist, there's evidence that suggests black people were more disproportionately considered feeble-minded, really probably due to lack of educational access and all of that. But they were considered feeble-minded, which means if Sanger is relying on that designation from medical doctors, she's going to disproportionately be trying to decrease the number of black people through contraception. So let me, I guess, Melody, does that kind of make sense? Or is there any like follow-up with that?
Yeah, I also want to mention to our listeners that a few years ago, we published an article in our Philosopher series about Margaret Sanger. It's called Margaret Sanger, No Gods, No Masters. And you can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. And we did mention in there that, you know, there is, as you mentioned, some evidence that she saw abortion as being morally wrong. So that is true. We note that in the article. And we also note, though, like you said, as you were talking at the end of your answer to me, is that there's certain things that she did believe in that were extremely disturbing. And part of that was infanticide. I mean, she saw reasons that children could be killed after they were born. And so obviously what has happened is, as we say in our article, that her philosophical descendants, where we have them today, the people who are involved in the pro-abortion movement, have disregarded the value of human life. And they just went to the full, you know, they took her original thoughts and took them to their full consequences, is what we have right now. And so in light of that, you know, you mentioned some statistics earlier. Why is it, when you said, okay, the amount of the female population in the United States is majority white, yet they have equal amounts of abortions? And you're right, you know, when you think of all the people that would be represented if those children had been born, then that's a lot of people that aren't, you know, around of any ethnicity, but specifically what you said, the rates are quite high. Why do you think it is that the abortion rate is high in the Black community? Why the disparity in the statistics that you quoted?
Yeah, those are good questions. So I think you can kind of, at least as I think about it, and of course, I would say, you know, even as a member of the Black community, I can't necessarily have, you know, answer fully for, you know, every Black person that's had an abortion or family or so forth. But as I look at it, I think that there are, I guess you can put it under kind of cultural issues and systemic issues. At a cultural level, I would have to say, I think part of the reason, a significant part of the reason that there's high abortions is that I feel like we as a Black community have increasingly left the Christian roots and traditions that have made us who we are as a people. So I would say rebellion against God and his truth is certainly one reason. I think God's word is losing its influence more and more in the Black community. I think in many ways, we were likely a stronger community, even under kind of outright oppression, like Jim Crow. As I talk to some of the older or hear from some of the older people in the Black community, you know, they will often say that they feel like our families and our communities were actually stronger when things were harder and very clearly unjust. And it seems like some of that is being lost. I think I didn't look this up recently, but if I recall, I'm going off the top of my head, but I think in the like 60s and the 1960s, only 20% of Black children were born outside of wedlock. But now that number today is around about, I think, 80%. So you have a lot of children that are being born outside of wedlock, marriages being abandoned. And so those things, I think, increase the likelihood of abortion when families are weaker and when there's a turning away from God's truth. And you see this trend kind of heavily promoted in like hip hop culture and so forth, kind of this sex out of wedlock aspect. So that's one aspect. So I think culturally, I have to start as a Black leader, as hard as it is to say, I have to be able to recognize that we bear responsibility. The other reality, though, is that I do think that there are cultural and systemic things that make abortion a greater temptation for Black people. And so what do I mean by that? So it's one thing so far, I mean, in my article and also in this discussion, we're talking about abortion, mainly looking at it through the lens of race. But I would say that you can also look at the issue of abortion through the lens of poverty, right? And when you look at it through the lens of poverty, what I have found in my research is that, and this is a quote from, I think, the Guttmacher Institute, which is the kind of research arm of Planned Parenthood. So this is according to them, but they said nearly half of abortion patients in the United States are poor and another 26% are low income. So you think about that, that means about 76% of all women who get abortions are either considered poor or low income, right? So this isn't just a racial issue. It's also a economic issue. And what that does is that when you start to think about this as an economic issue, you have to then ask the question, what can we do as the church, as God's people, and just as fellow human beings, what can we do to help the economic situation that tends to make abortion a greater issue? Just as a kind of a story, I was talking to, this was a few years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine who also pastors a church, and he knew two women in his family, and he's obviously a Black guy. He had two women in his family who were considering having an abortion, and they eventually did. I believe both of them had the abortion. And one of the things, you know, that he mentioned was one of their main issues was, even though they really didn't want to have an abortion, they were concerned about, how will I be able to care for this child? Just kind of given their, I think, economic situation. And so what you often find in the Black community, from everything I've seen, is that you don't really have some of the, like, you know, very feminist argumentation, like, this is my body, my choice kind of thing. And kind of like, you know, shout out your abortion type deal. It's not really that. It's more just like financial oftentimes, you know, and also needing social support. So I think those are issues. And I think we then also, when we think about it from an economic lens, we also have to think about historical and systemic injustice in this country. Why are there more abortions? Well, part of it has to do with poverty, but why is there poverty? There have been things that the Black community has suffered historically that has made poverty a reality, which makes abortion a temptation. And you think of, you look at kind of the lack of generational wealth that has affected us. So I think cultural and systemic are both important, Melody, in thinking about that.
Well, I want to ask you about specifically the Black church. And when I say that, just for some clarification for some of our listeners, when I'm saying the Black church, I don't mean African-American people who are in various different churches, but rather the body of churches that have been historically predominantly African-American. So those congregations where the majority or all of the congregation is part of the Black community. So is the Black church themselves actively, you know, doing anything to combat this really high rate of abortion within their community that you're talking about?
Yes. So my experience is, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. I went to a church that was very large, and it was like 100% African-American. Also, I'm familiar with other churches in the Baltimore area. And now I live in St. Louis. And so I have connection with Black Christians and pastors in the St. Louis area. I've kind of interviewed a few of my clergy friends and thinking about some of these issues. And I say all that to say, you know, I have a very, you know, I can only speak from my experience in the Black church. And, you know, the Black church is much larger than my experience. But from what I have had seen in my own experience, and from conversations I've had with fellow Black clergy, I would say that the Black church, sadly, is often very silent on the abortion crisis that's taking place in our community. And this may be because of a number of different reasons. Sometimes it's not just negligence, but sometimes it can be. But I would say, I think some of the things that keep Black pastors silent on the issues is, some Black pastors are simply just not aware of how serious this crisis is, just not aware. Some of my friends that I've spoke to who were clergy, and I shared with them some of the statistics of this, they were very surprised at how serious the issue of abortion is in the Black community. And they were pastoring in the Black community. And as a result, I had, well, you know, one of my friends invite me to come and teach on this topic at his church. So sometimes it's just lack of awareness. Also, I think some Black pastors may fear sounding too politically conservative in kind of teaching and preaching on this topic. I think sometimes also there's a desire to want to address some of the root systemic issues that I mentioned earlier that I think are cause of temptation to abortion, that sometimes in a desire to really address those issues, they may not speak out forcefully enough on the issue of abortion directly. But I would say, whatever the hindrances are, I want to encourage my Black brothers and sisters to speak out on this issue. And to have conversations with other Black people on this issue is important. And I will also say, Though I say that there is, from my experience, a lack of addressing the issue, I will also say there are notable exceptions in the Black community as well. One, just to mention one example, recently in 2019, the Church of God in Christ, so the Kojic denomination, which is largely African-American, in 2019, they formally expressed their opposition to elective abortions in a document called the Resolution of the Sanctity of Life, which passed through their denomination. And definitely in the church where I've grown up, you know, I've heard a sermon, you know, that was preached very forcefully against abortion. So there are definitely exceptions, but I would say overall more work needs to be done.
So because you say that more work needs to be done specifically in Black churches, what are the other things that Black churches or other Christians can do in order to respond to this, you know, very high rate of abortion in the Black community?
Yeah, so I would say the first thing that we should do, the most important thing we should do is pray, right? Ephesians 6 says we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but our fight is against the enemy. And I mean, I really believe that there is spiritual warfare going on in this country to kill the unborn, and not just the Black unborn, all unborn. I believe that this is a very satanic, demonic thing that's going on in our country. But obviously, this is disproportionately affecting the Black community. So I want to encourage all Christians, before we really do, quote unquote, do anything, we should often be praying. But then there are some practical things that we can do. You know, I would, like I just mentioned, I would encourage Black churches, Black Christians to talk about this. I would encourage Black preachers to preach on this topic. I would encourage Black churches to make it known to their congregation that they intend to be there for Black women who are pregnant and who carry their child to term, but who are struggling financially, to make that a priority, to make it known that the church community will support you if you need support, especially I think about single moms. Also, I would say for Black Christians and Black churches, like I would love to see a movement towards adoption, that would be a thing for those who are able to do that. Not everybody's able to do that, but for those who are able to adopt a child, there's definitely a lack of Black families adopting Black children. And for those who aren't African-American, but who care about this issue and want to help out, I would say, please do. In some ways that you can help out is maybe by financially supporting. Like if you have any Black friends that's kind of going through, that's struggling financially and they're pregnant and you can help out in that way, please do. Supporting crisis pregnancy centers, which seeks to help out women who are in need of help, who are pregnant, given the crisis pregnancy centers. Supporting pro-life ministries, supporting Black pro-life ministries, or perhaps campus ministers. And just to say a quick thing about campus ministers, like it is really hard. You know, you think about, like, for those who are familiar with a bunch of campus ministries, you have to raise money to do campus ministry for many organizations. And it is really hard a lot of times for Black people, because of the lack of financial resources, to raise money to do campus ministry. And I've seen this happen so much. I serve at a HBCU through my church. We partner with a ministry at an HBCU. And so I know that it's hard for Black people who want to do campus ministry to be able to raise funds. My encouragement would be to people who care about this issue, if you know some Black Christians who are interested in doing campus ministry, support them financially, so that they can go on to these campuses and not only take the gospel, but also take a pro-life ethic to the people that they minister to. And particularly HBCUs, you know, you could probably reach out to Christian organizations like CRU or InterVarsity or whatever and ask them, hey, what HBCUs are you? What campuses are you on? And who can I give to that may be struggling to raise what they need so that these pro-life Christians can get on these campuses and influence their peers? And then lastly, adoption is always an option, both for Black families and non-Black families, in adopting Black children that are in need of a home.
I just want to say, if any of our listeners don't know, HBCU stands for Historically Black College and Universities. But you just ended up talking just at the very tail end of your answer about adoption. So, you know, that's a whole topic unto itself, I'm sure. But just briefly, do you have any advice for white families given the current crisis, that might be open to adopting a Black child? Because I know sometimes that can be a provocative topic in the Black community. So what words of encouragement would you have for those families who'd be willing to adopt a child of a different ethnicity than their own?
Absolutely. That can be a controversial topic for some. I would encourage white Christian families that are in a place to adopt and to help. And especially, like I'm thinking about, for Black moms who aren't able to keep their children, but they courageously bring their child to term and give birth to their child. One way that we as Christians can support is by being able to adopt, or being willing to adopt when we're able. But I think part of the issue, the reason why many Black people struggle sometimes with white folks adopting Black children, has to really come down to, a lot of times when that happens, the kind of culture and heritage of the Black child isn't always respected and upheld. And so I would just encourage any white Christian family that does that to give thoughtful consideration as to how it is that you can provide both a loving home for a Black child, as well as to give that child, that Black child, plenty of points of contact with people who look like them, right? So if you're going to do it, make sure that, especially because as that child grows up, especially in our culture, given our history, they're more than likely are going to be wrestling with identity issues. And so it's really good to have like some Black friends and Black families that you know that can be around that child and that that child can have conversations with. Also, maybe even, I don't think this is necessarily a requirement, but consider like maybe we should attend a Black church, or when you're thinking about schooling options, that may be an issue. I guess it's just, my main thing is just be thoughtful about just kind of introducing that child to people that look like them, people who can kind of speak into them when they start wrestling with issues of identity, which often does happen.
What would you say to any woman that's listening to this podcast and, you know, feels extremely guilty because she's had an abortion in the past, or to any man listening who may feel extremely guilty because he encouraged or paid for a woman in his life to have an abortion in the past?
Absolutely. And there are many people in that position. I would say that the gospel of Jesus Christ is for you. I would say that having an abortion or encouraging an abortion is not the unpardonable sin. I would say that Jesus Christ came to die on the cross for all sin, including the sin of abortion. And that if you feel a level of guilt or shame because of that past decision regarding abortion, bring that to God, confess it to him, repent, and trust in Jesus, because Jesus' grace is sufficient to cover that sin and to cover all sins. And he will give you, if you're coming to him for the first time, you get the righteousness of Christ imputed to you through faith. And so you'll be clean in the sight of God because of Jesus' death and atonement.
Well, this has been a very thought-provoking conversation. But finally, for something on a much lighter note, I have some fun rapid-fire questions for Aaron. So Aaron, it's fall now. Starbucks pumpkin spice latte, yes or pass?
I will pass. The only thing I usually drink from Starbucks is a caramel apple spice.
Okay, there you go. Somewhat related. Early bird or night owl?
I am definitely a night owl. My wife, though, is an early bird.
Are you spontaneous or scheduled?
I'm more so lean towards the scheduled, though I appreciate some spontaneity, usually with friends dropping over and wanting to hang out. I like that kind of stuff.
And does your family have any pets?
We do not. We would definitely have a dog if we could. We are renting. And so my landlord right now isn't too fond of us having a dog.
Well, thanks, Aaron, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
My pleasure, Melody. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been
Aaron Turner Jr. Aaron has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Black Lives Matter, Inside the Womb and Out. And you can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.